Hello, and welcome to another edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you in conjunction with KBIA. Today's presentation is based on a novella by Louisa May Alcott, writing under the pen name A.M. Barnard, called Behind a Mask, first published in 1866. Today we present part one of Behind a Mask. The conclusion of our story will be aired next week at the same time here on KBIA. Now we take you back to the mid-1800s, to a stately home in the English countryside, where a family sits in their parlor, waiting.
Has she come yet, Bella?
No, Mama, not yet.
Oh, I wish it was over. The thought of it worries and excites me.
Who are they talking of, Lucia?
The new governess, Miss Muir. Shall I tell you about her, Gerald?
No, thank you. I have an aversion to governesses as a whole.
How will you bear it now?
Leave the house while she is here.
No, you won't. You're too lazy, my dear brother.
Please don't talk like that, boys. I dread the coming of a stranger, but Bella must be tutored, so we will all do our utmost to endure this woman.
Don't be troubled, Mama. Lady Sydney said she was a quiet, accomplished, amiable girl who needed a home and would be a help to poor, stupid me. So try and like her for my sake, not merely endure her.
I will, dear. But isn't it getting late? I hope nothing's happened. Did you send a carriage to the station for her, Gerald?
Oh, I forgot it. It's not that far. It won't hurt her to walk.
That is indolence, not negligence, Gerald. She will think it rude. Go and see to it, Ned.
Too late, Bella. The train was in some time ago. Give your orders to me next time. I'll take care of it. As for the governess, she is a woman and should be treated with common civility. A little extra kindness may be in order. Because she is poor and a stranger.
That is my dear, good-hearted Ned. Stand by poor little Miss Muir, won't we?
Oh, I do hope she won't be late. Punctuality is such a virtue, and this woman promised to be here at 7.
It is 7 right now, Mother.
There she is!
Stay here, child. It is her place to come to you.
I'll get the door. Mother, this is the new governess, Miss Muir. Miss Muir, allow me to apologize for not sending a carriage for you. There was a mistake. Bella, come here.
Thank you. No apology is needed. I did not expect a carriage.
I'm glad to meet you. Let me take your things.
You were punctual, Miss Muir, which pleases me. I'm an elderly invalid, as Lady Sydney told you. I imagine Lucia, who is soon to be my daughter-in-law, will give you directions about Bella's lessons. You will excuse me if I ask you a few questions. Lady Sydney's note was very brief, and I left everything to her judgment.
Ask anything you like, madam.
Are your parents living?
No, I have no family.
Dear me, how sad. Do you mind telling me your age?
19.
So young. Lady Sydney mentioned you were 25. I think, didn't she, Bella?
No, Mama. She only said she thought so.
I wish I was 30, but as I am not, I do my best to look and seem old.
She is rather pitiful, isn't she, Lucia, in her plain black dress? Poverty has set its stamp on her. Bella seems to like her.
You have been ill, I think.
Yes, madam. I left the hospital only a week ago.
Are you sure you're well enough to teach?
I will soon gain strength here in the country, if you allow me to stay.
And you are fitted to teach music, French, and drawing?
I shall endeavor to prove that I am.
Be kind enough to go and play an air or two. I can judge by your touch. I used to play finely when a girl.
How lovely!
Indeed.
Oh, she's fainted!
Miss Muir! Gerald, get off the couch and help me lay her on it.
Send for a wet cloth.
Here, a glass of wine.
Bide with me, mother. I'm so sick and sad here all alone.
Take a sip of this. It will do you good, my dear.
Oh, pardon me. I've been on my feet all day, and in my eagerness to keep my appointment, I forgot to eat this morning. I'm better now. Shall I finish the song?
By no means. Come and have some tea.
What a melodramatic young lady. Scene first. Very well done. Don't you think, Lucia?
Thanks. The last scene shall be still better.
What was that, Miss Muir?
Allow me to assume my duties at once and serve you all.
Really, my dear, you are a treasure. I haven't tasted such tea since my poor maid Ellis died. Bella never makes it good, and Miss Lucia always forgets the cream. Whatever you do, you seem to do well, and that is such a comfort.
Let me always do this for you, then. It will be a pleasure, madam.
Was young Sidney at home when you left?
No, he left home some weeks ago.
Lucia, I have a fancy that she is at the bottom of Sidney's mystery. He's not been himself lately, and now he is gone without a word. I rather like romances in real life if they are not too long or difficult to read.
Do you think her pretty?
Far from it.
Then why fancy Sidney loves her?
He is an oddity, and likes sensations and things of that sort.
What do you mean, Gerald?
Your tea, Miss Beaufort. I think it honest to tell you that I possess a quick ear, and cannot help hearing what is said anywhere in the room. What you say of me is of no consequence, but you may speak of things which you prefer I should not hear. Therefore, allow me to warn you.
How do you like that?
What an uncomfortable creature to have in the house. I am very sorry I urged her coming, for your mother has taken a fancy to her, and it will be hard to get rid of her.
Hush! She hears every word you say. Faith, this is getting interesting.
Miss Muir, are you sure there is no danger of infection now?
None, I assure you. I have been well for some time, but did not leave because I preferred to stay there than to return to Lady Sidney.
No quarrel, I hope. No trouble of any kind?
No quarrel, but... Well, why not? You have a right to know, and I will not make a foolish mystery out of a very simple thing. As your family only is present, I may tell the truth. I did not go back on the young gentleman's account. Please ask no more.
I see. Quite prudent and proper, Miss Muir. I shall never allude to it again. Thank you for your frankness.
Very neighborly of Lady S. to send the dangerous young lady here, where there are two young gentlemen to be captivated. I wonder why she didn't keep Sidney after she had caught him.
Because she had the utmost contempt for the titled fool.
How the deuce did she get there?
Come and play billiards. You promised.
I am, as ever, your most devoted. Good night, Mama.
I merely wish to say, Miss Muir, that my daughter has never had a governess and is sadly backward for a girl of 16. I want you to pass the mornings with her and get on as rapidly as possible. Miss Beaufort oversees the servants and takes my place as far as possible. I am very delicate and keep to my room till evening. We will try each other for a month, and I hope we shall get on quite comfortably together.
I shall do my best, madam.
Let me show you to your room, Miss Muir.
Only the housemaids were astir when Miss Muir left her room next morning and quietly found her way into the garden. Presently she came upon the wide green lawn which lay before the ancient hall where Sir John Coventry lived in solitary splendor. A stately old place, rich in oaks, well-kept shrubberies, beautiful gardens, spacious rooms, liveried servants, and every luxury befitting the ancestral home of a rich and honorable race.
Oh!
I beg your pardon for disturbing you, young lady. Allow me to atone for it by inviting you to walk where you will and gather what flowers you like. I see you love them, so pray make free with those about you.
Oh, thank you, sir. But it is I who should ask pardon for trespassing. I never should have dared if I had not known that Sir John was absent. I always wanted to see this fine old place, and ran over first thing to satisfy myself.
And are you satisfied?
More than satisfied, I'm charmed, for it is the most beautiful spot I ever saw, and I've seen many famous seats, both at home and abroad.
The hall is much flattered, and so would its master be if he heard you.
I should not praise it to him, at least not as freely as I have to you, sir.
Why not?
I should be afraid. Not that I dread Sir John, but I've heard so many beautiful and noble things about him, and respect him so highly, that I should not dare to say much, lest he should see how I admire and...
And what, young lady? Finish, if you please.
I was going to say love him. I will say it, for he is an old man, and one cannot help loving virtue and bravery.
In Sir John's name, let me give you my little nosegay, and with thanks for your good opinion, which, I assure you, is not entirely deserved, for I know him well.
I did not know... Beg your pardon. You are too kind, Sir John.
Why do you call me Sir John? How do you know that I'm not the gardener or the butler?
I did not see your face before, and no one but yourself would say that any praise was undeserved.
Well, well, we will let that pass, and the next time you come, we will be properly introduced. Belle always brings her friends to the hall, for I am fond of young people.
I am not a friend. I am only Miss Coventry's governess.
Oh.
Please excuse me, sir. I shall continue my stroll and not trouble you further.
After leaving the old gentleman wondering, she came upon a horse in a paddock.
What a beautiful creature. Here, have some clover.
Good morning, Miss Muir. If I had not seen your skill and courage proved before my eyes, I should be alarmed for your safety. Hector is a wild, wayward beast and has damaged more than one groom who tried to conquer him.
Good morning, Mr. Coventry. Your grooms did not know how to win his heart and so subdue his spirit without breaking it.
You have the secret, and Hector obviously likes you. Pet him as much as you wish. He is a solitary fellow, for he scorns his own kind and lives alone, like his master.
Alone? With such a happy home, Mr. Coventry?
That was an ungrateful speech, and I retract it, for Bella's sake. As a younger son, I have no authority here. But Bella is a capital girl, and I know you'll get along fine, for really, she is the most delightful little dunce.
I shall do my best. And that reminds me that I should report myself to her, instead of enjoying myself here. When one has been ill and shut up a long time, the country is so lovely, one is apt to forget duty for pleasure, Mr. Coventry.
That name belongs to Gerald. I'm only Mr. Ned here. Ah, here's Bella.
What a lovely bouquet you've got. I can never arrange flowers prettily. You have charming taste.
Take them to your mother, then.
Well, how kind you are. I'll take them to her while the dew is still on them. Oh, good morning, Gerald and Lucia. Look at these flowers.
How lovely.
Miss Bella and I should be at our books. Come, Bella.
Merciful creature. She goes when I come and does not make life unendurable by moping about before my eyes. Does she belong to the moral, the melancholy, the romantic, or the dashing class, Ned?
To none of them. She is a capital little woman. I wish you had seen her tame Hector this morning.
Why did she go?
You forget that she overheard us last night, and must feel that you consider her a bore. She has pride, and no woman forgets speeches like those you made.
Or forgives them either, I believe. Well, I will languish under her displeasure then. On Sidney's account, I take a slight interest in her. I have a fancy to see what captivated him. For captivated he was, beyond a doubt. Did you ever hear anything of it, Ned?
I'm not fond of scandal or gossip, and never listen to either. Please excuse me.
The arrival of Miss Muir seemed to produce a change in everyone, though no one could have explained how or why. Jean, as she insisted Bella call her, was the life of the house, and the friend of all but two. Lucia began to dislike her, and Gerald distrusted her. Neither could say exactly why. Pleading timidity, Jean Muir kept at Bella's study and soon made it such a pleasant little nook that Ned and his mother, and often Sir John, came in to enjoy the music, reading, or cheerful chat which made the evening so gay. Gerald fell into a habit of strolling out upon the terrace of an evening, and amusing himself by passing and repassing the window of Bella's room, catching glimpses of the joyful activities inside. One night he returned to Lucia, resolute.
I shall go to London tomorrow, Lucia.
To London?
Yes. I must bestir myself and get Ned his commission, or it will be all over with him.
How do you mean?
He is falling in love as fast as it is possible for a boy to do. That girl has bewitched him, and he will make a fool of himself very soon unless I put a stop to it.
I was afraid she would attempt a flirtation. These persons always do. They are such a mischief-making race.
Ah, but there you are wrong as far as little Miss Muir is concerned. She does not flirt, and Ned has too much sense and spirit to be caught by a silly coquette. I've been watching them, and there he is devouring her with his eyes while she reads a fascinating novel in the most fascinating style. Bella and Mama are absorbed in the tale and see nothing, but Ned makes himself the hero, Miss Muir the heroine, and lives the love scene with all the ardor of a man whose heart has just waked up. Poor lad, poor lad.
I certainly would send Ned away. It's no use trying to get rid of that girl, as you say, for my aunt is as deluded about her as Ned and Bella, and she really does get the child along splendidly. Dispatch Ned, and then she can do no harm.
I will go inform them of my trip. Has anyone any commands for London? I'm going there tomorrow.
A pleasant trip to you.
I want quantities of things, but I must ask Mama first. I will make a list.
May I trouble you with a letter, Mr. Coventry?
I shall be off by the morning train, so you must give me your orders tonight.
I will give you the letter in the morning.
As you please.
With unusual energy, Gerald was astir at 7 next morning. As he was leaving to order the carriage, Miss Muir came gliding downstairs, very pale and heavy-eyed, and put a delicate little letter into his hand.
Please leave this at Lady Sydney's, and if you see her, say, I have remembered.
All the way to London, Gerald found it impossible to forget the tragic expression on the girl's face, and it haunted him through the bustle of 2 busy days. Ned's affair was speedily accomplished, Bella's commissions were executed, his mother's pet delicacies provided for her, and a gift for Lucia, whom the family had given him for his future mate, as he was too lazy to choose for himself. Jean Muir's letter he had not delivered, for Lady Sydney was in the country and her townhouse closed. When he returned home, he saw her sitting alone in the garden, buried in thought.
Here is your letter. I regret that I could not deliver it. Lady Sydney was in the country, and I did not like to post it without your leave. Did I do right?
Quite right. Thank you very much. It is better so.
You're tearing it to shreds.
Please stay a moment. I want to speak to you.
Yes?
Mr. Coventry, as the head of the house, I want to speak to you of a most unhappy affair which has occurred during your absence. My month of probation ends today. Your mother wishes me to remain. I too wish it sincerely, for I am happy here. But I ought not. Read this, and you will see why.
Well, the boy has eloquence. Pity that it should be wasted. May I ask if you have replied to this rhapsody?
I have.
And what follows? He begs you to fly with him, to share his fortunes, and be the good angel of his life. Of course you consent. Why do you show me this? What can I do?
I show it that you may see how much in earnest Mr. Ned is, and how open I desire to be. You can control, advise, and comfort your brother, and help me to see what is my duty.
You love him?
No.
Then why make him love you?
I never tried to do it. Your sister will testify that I have endeavored to avoid him as you have avoided me.
I will do you the justice to say that nothing can be more blameless than your conduct toward myself. But why allow Ned to haunt you evening after evening? What could you expect of a romantic boy who had nothing to do but lose his heart to the first attractive woman he met?
If the romantic boy had been allowed to lead the life of a man, as he longed to do, he would have had no time to lose his heart to the first sorrowful girl whom he pitied. Mr. Coventry, the fault is yours.
You are right, Miss Muir. I am to blame. Yet, as soon as I saw the danger, I tried to avert it. My visit to town was on Ned's account. He will have his commission very soon, and then he will be sent out of harm's way. Can I do more?
No. It is too late to send him away with a free and happy heart. He must bear his pain as he can, and it may help to make a better man of him.
He'll soon forget.
Yes. Thank heaven, that is possible for men.
Miss Muir, you were both discreet and kind to speak only to me. I shall see Ned, and try and repair my long neglect as promptly as possible. I know you will help me, and in return, let me beg you to remain, for he will soon be gone.
You are too kind, but I had better go. It is not wise to stay.
Ned!
Where will you go, my Jean?
Now, don't make a scene, for heaven's sake.
Who gave you the right to read that, and to interfere in my affairs?
Miss Muir.
And you add to insult by ordering her out of the house?
On the contrary, I beg her to remain.
The deuce you do, and why?
Because she is useful and happy here, and I am unwilling that your folly should rob her of a home which she likes.
You are very thoughtful and devoted all at once, but I beg you will not trouble yourself. Jean's happiness and home will be my care now.
My dear boy, do be reasonable. The thing is impossible. Miss Muir sees it herself. She came to tell me, to ask how best to arrange matters. I've been to town to attend to your affairs, and you may be off now very soon.
I have no desire to go. Last month it was the wish of my heart. Now I'll accept nothing from you.
What folly! Ned, you must leave. It is all arranged and cannot be given up now. A change is what you need, and it will make a man of you. We shall miss you, of course, but that is better for you than getting into mischief here.
Are you going away, Jean?
No. Why should she go if you are gone?
Do you mean to stay?
I wish to remain, but yes, I must go. It is not wise to stay even when you are gone.
You are right, Jean. This is not the place for you, and you must let me see you in a safer home before I go.
It strikes me that this will be a particularly safe home once you are removed.
And I think that I leave a more dangerous person than myself behind me, as poor Lucia can testify.
Be careful what you say, Ned, or I shall be forced to remind you that I am master here. Leave Lucia's name out of this disagreeable affair, if you please.
You are master here, but not of me, or my actions, and you have no right to expect obedience or respect, for you inspire neither. Jean, I asked you to go with me secretly. Now I ask you openly to share my fortune. In my brother's presence, I ask, and will have an answer. Speak. Don't look to him. Tell me truly, with your own lips. Do you, can you love me, Jean?
I have told you once. Why pain me by forcing another hard reply?
You wrote a few lines, but I'll not be satisfied with that. You shall answer. I've seen love in your eyes, heard it in your voice, and I know it is hidden in your heart. Do not hesitate. No one can part us. Speak, Jean, and satisfy me.
I will speak, and speak truly. You have seen love in my face. It is in my heart, and I do not hesitate to own it. Cruel as it is to force the truth from me, but this love is not for you. Are you satisfied?
There. You see, Ned?
Look out! He has a knife! No!
What have I done?
Never mind, Ned. Forgive and forget. Lend me a hand to the house and don't disturb anyone. It's not much of a cut, I dare say.
Quick, lay him down. Give me your handkerchief and bring some water. Once you have done that, Dr. Scott is with your mother, I think. Go and bring him here. I will improvise a tourniquet.
The doctor came out quickly. With help, Gerald was able to walk to his room while the girl supported the wounded arm. Lucia and the housekeeper came bustling in, but he soon wearied of it, and sent them all away but Ned, who remorsefully haunted the chamber.
Come here, lad, and tell me all about it. I was wrong to be domineering. Forgive me, and believe that I care for your happiness more sincerely than for my own. Tell me about your love for Miss Muir.
She would make a man of me. She puts strength and courage into me as no one else can. She is unlike any girl I ever saw. She is wise and kind and sweet. She says what she means, looks you straight in the eye, and is as true as steel. Ah, Gerald, I love her so.
Upon my soul, Ned, I feel for you. And if there was no obstacle on her part, I'd do my best for you. She loves Sidney, and so there is nothing for it but to bear your fate like a man.
Are you sure about Sidney? May it not be someone else?
I am sure of it. She sent a mysterious letter to Lady Sidney and then tore it up with relief when I was unable to deliver it.
I'm glad it's Sidney and not you. I can bear it better.
Me?
Yes, you. I've been tormented lately with a fear that you cared for her, or rather, she for you.
You jealous young fool. We never see or speak to one another scarcely, so how could we get up a tender interest?
What do you lounge about on that terrace for every evening, and why does she get fluttered when your shadow begins to come and go?
I like the music, and don't care for the society of the singer. That's why I walk there. The fluttering is all your imagination. As you've seen, Miss Muir isn't a woman to be fluttered by a man's shadow.
I'm talking too much. It's bad for you. Dr. Scott said you must be quiet. Now go to sleep if you can.
If the bandage was loosened a bit, it would ease my arm, and then I could sleep. Can you do it, Ned?
I dare not touch it. The doctor gave orders to leave it till he came in the morning.
Ah, well, go to your dinner, Ned. If you see Miss Muir, please ask her to come look at the bandage. I'm in great pain. After the way she applied the tourniquet, she seems to understand wounds better than anyone in the house.
I will do that. Good night, dear brother.
I'm glad you sent for me. What can I do for you?
These bandages are a bit tight.
Oh, say no more. There, how's that?
Ha ha, that's a relief. That's comfort. How came you to know so much about these things?
In the hospital where I was ill, I saw much that interested me, and when I got better, I used to sing to the patients sometimes.
Do you mean to sing to me?
You are feverish. I shall wet your forehead, and then you will be quite comfortable. Shut your eyes, Mr. Coventry, and give me your hand, please.
Much amazed, he gave it, and, taking it in both her small ones, she sat down in a nearby chair and remained as mute and motionless as a statue. Soon a subtle warmth seemed to steal from the soft palms that enclosed his own, his heart beat quicker, his breath grew unequal, and a thousand fancies danced through his brain.
I like this.
And in the act of speaking, he seemed to sink into a soft cloud of perfect repose. Sleep, deep and dreamless, fell upon him. And when he woke, daylight was shining in between the curtains, his hand lay alone on the coverlet, and his fair-haired enchantress was gone. For several days, Coventry was confined to his room, though everyone did their best to lighten his convalescence, with one exception. Jean Muir never came near him. From a housemaid, Gerald learned that the governess had been scolded by Miss Beaufort for going to Mr. Coventry's room. Edward wisely submitted to his fate and prepared to leave home. The day Edward left, he offered his hand to his brother and looked him in the eye.
I trust you, Gerald.
You may, Ned. Godspeed.
After Edward left, Miss Muir seemed to shun Gerald more assiduously than she had done before. All this annoyed him intensely, and the more she eluded him, the more he desired to see her. One day, out his window, he saw her slender black figure just vanishing through the great gate towards the hall where Sir John lived. Bella had mentioned that she often read to Sir John. He rose, and, after eluding Lucia, he turned toward the hall. And here we must leave the troubled Coventry household. We hope you have enjoyed the first part of Behind a Mask, based on a novella by Louisa May Alcott. Our producer was Darren Helwich, and the story was adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan and Hilary Carter. Our players were Ali Cascio as Lucia Beaufort, Brad Buchanan as Gerald Coventry, Joe Bogue as Edward Coventry, Val Davis as Jean Muir, Dave Collins as Sir John Coventry, Ella Folkerts as Bella Coventry, and Maggie Henson as Mrs. Coventry. This is your narrator, Hilary Carter, inviting you to tune in the same time next week for the exciting finale of this story, presented by Maplewood Barn Radio Theater here on KBIA.